say it'll help with the sound. Arsenio is a professional sound engineer.
Means it's the bulbs on the legs, or I mean, just because it's higher. Okay.
Not too distracting.
Can it be? Could it be like by here? Could it be like this? Would that work?
Yes.
Get one with like treads on her.
Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So Shankya's 23 evolutes of Prakriti.
Eight.
The first evolute of Prakriti is Mahat, or Buddhi, the intellect. This is the great seed of the vast universe, therefore the name Mahat, which means the great one. This is the state of union of Purusha and Prakriti. Prakriti is unconscious material substance. It seems to be conscious and realizes itself as conscious because of the presence of the conscious self. Mahat is the state in which Prakriti receives light from Purusha, the fountain of light, and sees itself. And this process of seeing is the beginning of the manifestation of the universe. The individual counterpart of this cosmic state, Mahat, is called Buddhi, the intellect, the finest aspect of a human being that has the capacity to know the entire personality in its full purity. Buddhi is the immediate effect of Prakriti resulting from the guidance of Purusha. Therefore, Buddhi is the evolute closest to Purusha. Buddhi is manifested from the sattvic aspect of Prakriti. Because of the nature of sattva, weightlessness, clarity, and light is affected sooner by the active force of manifestation than would be the heavier and unclear nature of tamas. Because of the sattva quality of buddhi, the light of the self reflects in the intellect, similar to the way an external object reflects in the clear surface of a mirror. The self, seeing its reflection in the mirror of buddhi, identifies itself with the reflected image and forgets its true nature. Thus the feeling of I-ness is transmitted to buddhi. In this way, the unconscious buddhi starts functioning as a conscious principle. Right? So Prabhupada mentions that the buddhi is the intelligence is the closest thing to the supersoul. Right? So there being it's the closest to Purusha. The only thing is the Purusha is not the jiva, but the Purusha is the supersoul. Right? Is the Lord. Because it's the Lord that enters. Right, and so therefore then everything starts to take on the elements. So technically what's going on here is correct. It's just that they don't actually understand the difference between Purusha, right? Because there has to be that element that there is the sameness, right? Because as we see is that in the beginning, then the Shankya is Vaishnav, right? And then after two generations, then we see that there is those who are professing non-theistic, right? So that means that the process has to be the same. Otherwise, it would have to change the philosophy. So all this change is that Purusha, they've taken to mean the soul, and Purusha meaning the Supreme Lord. Because what's not being brought into effect here is, okay, it shows how we identify with the material energy. But it's not showing why is it that Prakriti became Mahat? What created that imbalance, right? Because they didn't say, did one guy, you know, start it off, he pushed the wrong button or, you know, something, leaned on something and it fell over, you know, something. Or that, you know, the cosmic, conference, you know. But in any case, it's still not clear. It's like you're just going by, there's Prakriti turns into Mahat and then they're going from there. But why that would happen, that's missing. Right.
They also say the state of union, Purusha and Prakriti.
Yes, because then you have the masculine and feminine principle.
That's before or
after? I mean, in this case, it would be after this. With Mahat, then that's what's happening. Because the Lord's entered as time, the living entity, and false ego.
That's according to our philosophy.
Theirs, it just appears that by the jivas being there somehow or another, then the material energy becomes conscious of itself, even though it's not conscious. You know what I'm saying? That's always the problem with things. They have to make a bit of a step somewhere that doesn't quite make sense. But once you've gotten over that, everything, you know, falls into place. But it's that initial point that doesn't quite make any sense yet. You know, that's where the weaknesses are. So in this, that's what you'd have to look at. Because in other words, everything's going to come back to the Lord. Mm-hmm. But the difficulty is in all these ones, they may take it back, they may not. Or even if there are things, like in the theistic ones, is that they believe God's there, but he's not the important element in the conversation. You know, he's there, he's controlling things, but it's not actually, you're not trying to actually do anything with him, you're just trying to get out of here. You know, so since he's the one controlling everything, that's okay. But as far as doing anything, then that's with him, that's not an importance. You know, is that so? Yeah. So then, by the Mahat, then that creates the illumination. Then one can see oneself, and what you're seeing, then you think is yourself. But the problem is with Mahat, the subtle elements haven't manifest yet. Excuse me, the gross. All there is the subtle concept. So the living entity is not manifest in a form that they would take on this I-ness yet. So it doesn't quite, they're putting this at the wrong point. It would be after the manifestation, you know, mm-hmm. like that. So this seeing, okay, unless you're saying that when Prakriti and Purusha are combined, then there's creation. And then the byproduct of that is the buddhi. Then the living entity sees himself. Then maybe you could get away with it. But they're kind of leaving out this whole thing of the primary and secondary creation. They're not making a distinction here. Mm-hmm. Ahankar, the sense of I. Ahankar is a derivative of mahat or buddhi.
So this order is wrong too. I mean, according to us, ahankar comes first, prior to buddhi.
Yeah, ahankar is there, means there's the overall, I am the controller and enjoyer. Then you have the ahankar of the specific.
Okay, yeah.
You know? So basically there's a, means like this thing, it's the closest thing to Purusha. They just miss which Purusha. You know? At the same time as there is also, that's the natural thing, is the living entity can use his natural intelligence. Mm-hmm. Right? It means you don't have to be in a spiritual form to use the spiritual intelligence. You just have to do it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is he generally doesn't because of the mind, because intelligence is controlled by the mind. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So when he is not, then he can just go, this is correct. But then whether he can do it, then that depends upon the mind agreeing.
Yes.
You understand?
Right.
So you get that. You can see things clearly, what should be done, what should not be done, according to Shastra, everything, because that's the intelligence. Yeah. Right? Like that. Because the spiritual intelligence can always be used. Right, what we're doing is using the mechanics or of the material intelligence, but it's the spiritual that's functioning. But then we again come over the illusion of the mind, and then don't do it, mm-hmm. even though we see it. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Mark, can you say that the strong mind is more important than strong intelligence?
Means the point is you're trying to catch the mind. But the thing is the strong mind is there, but it should have something to choose with. Because even though the mind is there, if it can't distinguish between one thing and another, how can it choose? Right? Because the mind can only choose what's being offered. The mind doesn't make the varieties. Right? It makes choices from what's there. So the developed intelligence means then you can see more options. But then it requires the developed mind to choose the better ones.
They don't go together? They interconnected?
Not necessarily. Just like you see is that here's somebody with a very developed intelligence, but not necessarily mind. You know what I'm saying? It means the Nyayas, Vaisheshika, Shankyait, means they're very developed intelligence. But they're not working on the element of developing the mind. You only get into that aspect in Patanjali, the next one. Mm. Right? So that's why it's considered a higher thing, because it's including the intelligence.
The mind.
The mind. Right? The first three only use intelligence.
So we can say that in their spare time, those philosophers, they do whatever they want. They just like to philosophize.
Basically, it seems so. And so they'll do their duties, but they're always just looking at how they're not all these things. So the mind aspect won't be so developed. You know, they're probably very dutiful, do the right thing. But they're always looking at it from that element of being something beyond. You know, that there's something beyond the material, and they're just identifying what's what. So I would expect that they would be performing their duties. You know, unless you don't get the idea that only those persons in the renounced order are doing this, you know, but that they would just be separating everything constantly, you know. So they would be doing the social things, but just mechanically, right? Just, you know, so it would work, but it wouldn't have that, the social element wouldn't have that inspiration. That's the thing, because we're accepting rasa, therefore that aspect can come out, but the problem is then we have to be careful to distinguish between spiritual rasa and material rasa, right? Because then that comes, because if rasa is okay, then we take all the rasa. No, it's spiritual rasa, not material, right? But the thing is what makes it spiritual and what makes it material is if it's connected to the Lord or not. You know, because we have the thing is that spiritual rasa is one activities and material rasa is another set of activities. So if you're doing these set of activities, it's spiritual automatically. If you're doing these set, it's material automatically. But the point is that, no, if you're doing the activity connected to the Lord, it's spiritual, and if it's not, it's material. That's the point where we generally tend to not catch. I mean, if you say it, everybody will agree. But in application, we don't always apply it that way. Is that? Yeah.
So, Mark, this means that we can have the intelligence to understand, but not the right mind to apply.
Yeah, so that's why sadhana means we practice. Mm-hmm. Right? Because just like we're hearing this morning, is that the neophyte has heard the philosophy, knows all the things, but, you know, so when it comes to God and the philosophy, generally it works okay. But when it comes to the other living entities, that's where it starts to fall apart. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, it's like we can be nice to the animals, but not to the humans. You know, or nice to the plants, but not to the animals. You know, something is, you know, it's not balanced. Okay, ahankara is derived of mahat, or buddhi. Right, well, taking Mahara's Buddhi, I'm sure if we come down and then we'll see again, we'll see if again the Buddhi comes out. You know, because sometimes you have to see, sometimes they give different names. Because they're taking Buddhi meaning basically of being conscious.
Right.
Or being aware, being able to distinguish. So then Mahat, they're taking that aspect. So then the next to come is Ahankar. Okay, Ahankar is a derivative of Mahat or Buddhi. It is the mundane property of individualization that generates a material boundary of I-ness. Right? There's the concept of I-ness, but they're not taking the I-ness meaning I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Right? Because that's actually mundane. Because in here, they're leaving that one alone. Right? Basically, because that's coming from there. You just fold that back up, and then when you come to that state of oneness, then it's okay. But so here there's this two levels of I-ness. I-ness means I'm the controller and enjoyment. The second layer is I am the controller of this and I am the enjoyer of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's particular.
Mm-hmm.
Or as we were saying before, peculiar. This false sense of identity separates oneself from all others and focuses it upon matter. Right? Because the other is just, you want is on energy. So you're not distinguishing whether it's spiritual or material. But as soon as you have it, then the energy itself separates, you know, and manifests then as the external. So then within that, then you think, I am this within that external energy. So therefore you separate yourself from the other. So now what they're trying to show is how you've separated yourself. Now if you reverse this, then it all merges back. But if it all merges back, then how would there be an individual that started it? Or how would there be a conference of individuals to start it? You know what I'm saying? Because the point of starting it is at the Mahat. You know, but there's no sense of I-ness until after that.
Yes.
You know, so therefore you couldn't have, you know, either an individual or all the individuals, you know, making the creation. You know, starting the process. So therefore Purusha has to be beyond the creation. Because Purusha is what causes the imbalance in the first place. Right? Does that make sense? But here then, imbalance means the Prakriti is natural balance and everything else is not appropriate. But the point is following the Lord's rules, that's appropriate. Not following is inappropriate. So therefore, at certain times it's appropriate that the modes are manifest and working. At certain times it's appropriate that they don't. When the Lord breathes in, then you just have Prakriti. When the Lord breathes out, then you have Mahat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's not a... Does that make sense? Right? So in other words, using the term out of balance, you know, works on the level of that, you know, you're trying to create a balance, but the balance is according to the situation. Right? Like a kshatriya being balanced means it's that particular combination of the modes. It's being used correctly according to the Lord's laws. Right? The Brahman is a different combination. So the balance of that is that's being engaged according to the Lord's laws. Shudra is another balance. It's being used according to the Lord's laws. That's balance. Right? We're not talking about here, but what they're applying is in the Ayurveda, you have the balance of the mucus, bile, and air. When that's there, there'll be no disease. Right? So here, when you balance the modes, then there'll be no disease. But balance actually means bringing it in line with the Lord. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
They say about the evolution. What about the dissolution?
It's just the reverse of this.
They don't say who triggers the one and they don't say who triggers the other?
Yeah, it just seems to be the modes. I'm not sure. Yeah, we'll have to see what they say. But the problem is there's certain things that they don't discuss. So that's your technically your dogma. It's just what's not discussable.
They're similar to modern
religions. Yeah, means all of these will be similar because modern religions are based on these. You know? So it's just what combination they use, what aspects from which. But as we, you know, finish this study going to the Tattva Vivek, we'll see is that all it is just particular combinations of these. Right? These are just the things, just like we study karma yoga, jnana yoga, separately. right? But when they're applied together. It's just which is prominent. You know, it's just like in the Ashtanga yoga, if you're doing the asanas, it's called Hatha yoga. If you're doing the asanas and the pranayama, I think it's called Raja yoga. You know, when you add something else and they call it a difference. So it's just which stage you are, the different things. So it appears to be different, but it's actually the same thing, just which is prominent. Like that. Okay. The false sense of identity separates oneself from all others and focuses upon matter. Right? So this is actually what happens. You separate yourself because of your false ego. But it's not a matter of removing the ego and then everybody becomes one again. It's a matter of removing the ego and seeing yourself as servant of Krishna. So everybody else is servant of Krishna, but they all remain as individuals, and then you'll deal properly. Right? So the false ego is the problem. Right? And then you can say that separateness of individuality, means this I-ness, the false ego, is the problem. So you remove the false ego, but then the mundaner will think that that removes the individuality. No, it removes the definition of individuality. From being the individual controller and enjoyer to being the individual servant. Right? So therefore, the materialist, you know, sees the oneness of all beings, but the spiritualist sees the oneness. But their oneness, so one is able to function in the social reality, mundane reality, the other can function in the spiritual reality. So the problem is when they only accept one or the other. Right? It's I'm different from everybody else, so they socially can't function, or, you know, we're all the same and there is no individuality on the spiritual. So from the karma and jnana, if it gets out of balance, then it doesn't function. You know. But balance always means the Lord's definition, yes.
Maharaj, what is the definition of the real ego according to Sankhya philosophy?
I don't think they go into that. Because the point is they're just trying to remove. They're taking these 23 evolutes of Prakriti and they're trying to remove that, just making it back to Prakriti. Because in other words, they're taking it, all the problems come because there are the manifestation of these. So you get rid of this manifestation, then there's no problem. So therefore it remains as an impersonal, rather than the Vaishnava, where you're entangled by being absorbed in the material energy through these 23.
Yes.
So you remove that attraction to these 23, yes. Then you absorb yourself back into the actual transcendental pastimes. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're giving up the material identity and taking up the spiritual. But here in these ones, they just remove the material. Mm-hmm. There is no introduction of spiritual. This false sense of identity separates oneself from all others and focuses it upon matter, leading a person to think, I am this body, this is mine, and this is for me. There are three categories of ahankara, sattvika, rajasa, and tamasa, determined by which of the three gunas is predominant in ahankara. Right, so we also mention it like that. You know, because there's... But they only deal with three, we deal with four, which is the first one. Like that. I don't remember, Bhagavatam mentions it, you know. Like that. Rajasat, I can't remember that.
What's the first one?
The first one is I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? Because that one they don't deal with. They just deal with the one coming from sattvic, rajas, and tamas. But polluted consciousness that they don't deal with. Right, because the grossest one is, you know, my identity in the body. The next one will be the intelligence and the senses. Then the higher one will be the mind. But then there's also the point, even you get rid of those three, you still remain the one that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that's why the Maya bodies come back. That's why impersonalists come back, because the last one's still there. It's mundane. Right? Because as soon as you think I'll control and enjoy energy, it is mundane. It's not a matter of you're situated in the spiritual world. You're situated in the material world. You know, the consciousness is there. You're acting materially, even though the body might still be in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Because the point is you're dealing with energy. It's not a matter of time and space. It's a matter of you're dealing with energy. So how you deal with energy is how she'll reciprocate. you think you're the controller and enjoyer, then she'll act as dead matter. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. So that one is there, then after creation, then the other three manifest. Right? Then we take those up. 11 senses arrive from the sattvika ahankar. The 5 senses of perception, hearing, touching, seeing, tasting, and smelling. The 5 senses of action, verbalization, apprehension, locomotion, excretion, and procreation. And the mind, manas, right? Because the mind comes out of the mode of goodness, right? So that's the one. There's a name for that. He doesn't give the name here, but Bhagavatam gives the names of that particular group. Interesting is verbalization. Okay, is the voice locomotion, the legs, excretion, procreation. So apprehension must mean the arms.
Accepting.
Huh?
Accepting.
No, because here is the 5 senses of action. So it's the that means your legs, which is locomotion, the arms, which is apprehension, the voice, which is verbalization, right? Anus is excretion, genitals procreation. I guess apprehension means to be able to
understand.
Apprehension, but I think here apprehension means to be able to catch things.
Oh yeah.
You apprehend it.
Yeah, like the police apprehend it.
Yes. I think it's apprehension, catching it, getting it, or yeah. You know, it may mean like that. Because once you understand, then you catch it.
Yeah. Same thing.
Gorilla pod. Okay. The 5 ton matras. Or subtle elements, sound, touch, color, taste, and smell, are derived from the tamasa ahankar. Right? Sound, touch, color, taste, and smell. The function of the rajasa ahankar is to motivate the other two gunas, and thus it is the cause of both aspects of creation, the 11 senses and the 5. So that means the 16. So that's where you get the 16. Why that 16 is in that group, because then it covers, you know, all the aspects of the false ego. This explanation, the manifestation of ahankar, is based on the Shankhya Kartika, the major text of the Shankhya philosophy. The commentators of this text hold various views. Some state that the mind is the only sense derived from the sattvika ahankar, and that the other 10 senses are derived from the rajasa ahankar, and that the 5 subtle elements are derived from the tamasa ahankar. Irrespective of the origin of the senses, all the scholars view the nostrils, tongue, eyes, skin, and ears as the physical organs that are the sheaths of the cognitive senses. Yes.
Sorry, I just remembered. You mentioned the Sanskrit. They're called Karmendriya and Gyanendriya.
No, there's Karmendriya, Gyanendriya. Yeah. No. This is, can I say, Tamasa, Taijasa, some other. There's 4 names of the 4 kinds of false ego.
Oh,
okay. Like that. It's mentioned like either 3rd or 5th canto or something like that.
Oh, like that primeval fear or primeval envy.
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but there's a point. It's in one of the explanations of creation.
Yeah, I remember.
It's not the 2nd canto one. I think it's later one that it defines that.
Yeah.
Conditioning sits in the ahankar. That's what they say.
Conditioning.
Demands.
Yeah, means you're conditioned would be this. We'll put it that it goes back to the polluted consciousness. Because if the polluted consciousness is not there, you wouldn't do it in the first place. But they're not recognizing polluted consciousness so much. That means they're taking this first sense of I-ness as the polluted consciousness. But they're not understanding that comes from the desire to enjoy the material energy. They're not catching that it's actually there from the concept that I'm the separate controller and enjoyer. So your identity was already there before all this took place. Like that. But just this may be where it can manifest. Yes.
So maybe I just missed it, but I haven't seen any mention of the jiva, like to which all these elements adhere or gravitate around.
No, it seems that they're not as worried about that. Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems that they're more like the materialists who say that.
Yeah, that it comes from matter.
Product of matter.
I think that's what they mentioned before, anyway.
That this is the first atheistic.
That's that the material nature. Yeah, because concept of God, yeah. Then the concept of material nature. We'll see when we get to the consciousness of it. If we get to the jiva at all. Oh, here's the concept of the living entity that's coming up.
That's later on?
Yeah, okay. The next page.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay, irrespective of the origin of the senses. In other words, some will say that the mind and the senses, the 10 senses, are coming out of goodness. Some will say only the mind comes out of goodness, the senses come out of passion. Right? But then all of them will say that the, you know, nostrils, tongue, eyes, skin, and ears, that comes out of ignorance. So that they'll all say. It's just a matter of which they say comes out of what. That I know we say the senses come out of passion. Because they're active. They're the ones that do things. Like that. Because otherwise, the other, if it comes out of there, so passion is just what kind of brings them together. Which in one sense you could say. But the point is that it's the mind and the sense objects are being brought together. You know, the senses just happen to be the medium, so that puts them in the position of passion. Right? But they're taking it that they're there, and then here, and then the mode of passion is just bringing them together. But what's causing that? So that would have to be, again, the mind. You know, so... Yeah.
And why mind
isn't
goodness?
But active doesn't mean it can't be in goodness.
It can be, but the senses are active, question.
Yes, so but it's higher, it controls them, so that puts it in that position of goodness. Because means goodness is your shastra, what should be done, everything like this, so the mind is what decides what should be done. So therefore, if the mind is in line with the scriptures and does things as it should, then things work out nice. Then you're situated in the mode of goodness. If it doesn't, it's not, so the mind gets disturbed. So the mind is only happy actually when it's in a you know, controlled, regulated, clean, progressive environment. Then the mind is actually peaceful. But because of taste, people are modes, then they'll situate themselves differently. But they suffer. They always suffer. It's not that they'll say they're happy, but they're suffering. So it's just that they want to, their happiness is suffering in a particular way.
The mind always stays in goodness.
No, mind is created by goodness, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you are situated in goodness and how you're using it. But it's made out of, it's produced from goodness.
And intelligence?
Passion. Because it's the active one, it controls the senses. Right? The body is produced out of ignorance.
Mind controls everything, so it's higher, that's why it's a goodness.
Yeah. But the intelligence is the one that simply discerns.
It
doesn't make the decision. The mind makes the decision. That's why when you say that the intelligence is in control of the mind, means the mind has already accepted the higher principle of elevation. So when the intelligence says, this is the options of elevation, the mind takes it. So that means it's, therefore it's controlled by the mind. I mean by the intelligence. But when the intelligence presents it and the mind doesn't accept it, then it's you know, that's not good. Because then you're controlled by, you know, the ignorance, passion, these other things. Right? But then even if it's controlled by goodness and does all the right things, but if it doesn't accept devotion, then that's still an obstacle, still materialistic. Right? Because the smarter will accept goodness and do everything properly, but they're not accepting devotion. Does that make sense? So then that becomes a weakness.
Mm-hmm.
When someone does not have a full sambandha-gya, he cannot use properly mind and intelligence?
The tendency is not to, because then you don't know who you are, who God is, and what the material energy and what's actually the proper usage, so that mistakes will be made. You know, does that make sense? Likewise, the mouth, arms, legs, and organs of excretion and reproduction correspond to the five senses of action. Verbalization, apprehension, locomotion, excretion, and procreation. Yeah, so that makes sense. The arms, yeah. The apprehension.
It's funny because it also means nervous. Someone who's apprehensive is also someone who's nervous.
Yeah, but then what do you do? Your arms are ready. You know?
Yeah.
You know, you're ready to do something with your arms. But it's interesting how they get it. In other words, they get it back to the point of what always works, because otherwise you might call it something else.
Uh-huh.
But this is what it actually does.
Yeah.
The arms actually apprehend things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that.
It's just like when we say, oh, I see. You're not literally seeing, but it's just metaphorical.
But it's here. So verbalization, and that's the voice. So that means that whole.
Yeah.
These physical organs are not the senses. Rather, they are given power by the senses. Thus, the senses cannot be perceived, but can only be inferred from the actions of the physical organs powered by them. Right? So that's why your sense can go down. Right? Because the sense itself is a fixed thing. Right? It's an element of the material nature. But what happens is the physical organ, it starts to break down or not be in such good shape as time goes. Therefore, you're unable to smell so good. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense? Thus, the senses cannot be perceived, but can only be inferred from the actions of the physical organs powered by them. The mind, the ego, and the intellect are called the internal senses. While the five cognitive senses and five senses of action are called external. The mind is master of all the external senses, and without its direction and guidance, they could not function. The mind is a very subtle sense indeed, but it also has many aspects, and it therefore comes into contact with several senses at the same time. According to Shankya philosophy, mind is neither atomic nor eternal, but it is rather a product of Prakriti. It is therefore subject to origin and dissolution. The cognitive senses means, in other words, that the living entity has a mind. That's the natural position. But it's either you have it on the Nityabhada stage or the Nityamukta stage. But you can also be in the middle in the spiritual stage and not exactly be functioning in that capacity. Mm-hmm. But if there's not some functioning, how do they appreciate? How do they remember? How do they, you know, right? So there is the natural mind of the living entity.
Mm-hmm.
But they're unaware of its application in the transcendental realm. They only know, because otherwise all they can remember is the material.
Mm-hmm.
The cognitive senses means the particular mind that you have, that will be made and go away, because it's made of atoms, right? Of the material energy, it'll be put together, and so then it'll dissolve. Right? The cognitive senses contact their objects and supply their experiences to the mind, which then interprets the data as desirable or undesirable perceptions. In turn, ahankara attaches itself to the objects of perception, identifying itself with the desirable ones and resenting the undesirable ones. The intellect then decides how to deal with those external objects. Right? Decides means it works out what are your options, but it's still up to the mind to make the choice. Like the mind may, I kind of want to do this, or has a feeling, so the intellect will work out what's there, but the mind still chooses. So they're constantly going back and forth. So things that are nice, then the false ego identifies with. right? So therefore the mind, you know, these are things that are accepted, and the intelligence will work out how to deal. So they all, you see, the all three of them, they all working together.
Yeah.
Like that.
That's why the is on the sambandha and the mind is on the prajumna, or sorry, the anirudha side.
Yeah, so it's what you're trying to actually gain, what's your final.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, and so the intelligence is what connects the...
Yeah.
Because that's the passion. So you have the goodness, the passion, and ignorance.
Yeah.
Like that. So the problem is on the material platform, your sambandha is ignorant. It's ignorance. You know, so your activity is passion because you want a result that you want to enjoy. You know. And then the mode of goodness is then the mind. So that's in the position of enjoying or trying to gain whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And once you've gained it, it goes back to the position of ignorance. Then you have more false ego.
Yeah.
Right, you want to gain a house, now you have a house. Right? So now your ego is bigger, you have a house now to fill up. Right, you know.
I have a question about this. Mind is neither atomic nor eternal, but it's origin and dissolution. So we would be in line with this because
basically. But then the only question is then with the other ones, because they only said earth, water, fire, air were atoms.
Uh-huh.
You know, but at the same time as you do have the element of mind.
Yeah.
So whether it is they only work with those four, or whether there are, you know, atomic particles of mind.
Right.
You know, that would be the one point. So in other words, the manifestation of the mind in this particular form is temporary.
Right.
Just like a manifestation of earth is temporary.
Yeah.
Right? It means the atoms are there, and then we have it in this, what we see here. So some are rocks, some are dirt, some is, you know, whatever it is. But that can go back to the earth atoms.
Right. So for us, for this, the soul actually carries a subtle body, you know, from birth to birth to birth. But eventually when we obtain liberation, then that mental bag kind of merges back into the...
Yeah, it just goes back into the thing. But the particular one it is that... You're dealing with mind, but the thing is the particular manifestation of how good or not it is, that changes by the particular situation you're in.
So mind can transform?
It appears to. Sometimes it's strong, sometimes it's weak, sometimes the intelligence is strong and weak, the false ego is that, so it's always in a chain, you know, flux. But the point is whatever state it's in, that's what goes to your next body. Right? And then however you deal, it seems to adjust during that time, and then however you leave, it leaves is how you'll start again the next one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In the spiritual world, we don't have mind, intelligence, and ego.
Yeah, no, you have, but it's
so
just
they function.
It's the natural, but it's you're not bringing it from here.
Yeah.
It's just the natural, because what it is that our natural consciousness, our natural position is covered. Mm-hmm. That's the...
Wouldn't it also be of an absolute nature that there's no difference between you and your mind?
Yeah. Because it means no difference between you and the body. It's the same. It's just an extension of the consciousness.
Right.
And when it's said that the false ego is the last element that remains up to Bhava,
that's the part that means, that's the part where meaning the original, I'm the controller and enjoyer. See, but on the subtle platform, it's I am. The devotee, I am guru of devotees. That's the form of it at that stage. You know, so that's why, you know, thinking, you know, because then, yeah. Does that make sense?
It is prescribed in spiritual life to get under the control of mind by intelligence. So mind is, it's a principle of goodness.
Yeah, but the point is then there's action. You know what I'm saying? You're active. So mode of passion just controls action. So what you do, it's your activities are controlled by means the mind is in control by the intelligence. So that means your actions are in line with what's the intelligent thing to do. You know what I'm saying? These modes are only a problem when they're not connected to the Lord. You know, just like, let's say, I'm cooking because I'm supposed to. It's my duty. So the act of my cutting up the potato into pieces is actually my duty. So that's controlled by the mode of goodness, right? That I'm actually cutting the potato into pieces. I'm destroying the form of the potato, so that's the mode of ignorance functioning. At the same time as I'm creating a new form of the potato, that's the mode of passion. You understand? So they're all doing something. They're all. So if it's connected to Krishna, it's fine. If it's not connected to Krishna, then you get bound. So.
And within cutting the potato, there's all kinds of goodness, ignorance, and passion.
Yeah, yeah. So if your finger gets involved or not. You know.
How about mashed potatoes?
That's some serious destruction of the original form of the potato. The five ton matras of sound, touch, color, taste, and smell are the subtle counterparts to the gross elements. They can be inferred but not perceived. They evolve after the 10 senses have come into being and are the cause of the five gross elements. Right? So that's 10, 5, and 5, so you get 20. Mm-hmm. Right? Which are derived in a gradual step-by-step process. First to evolve is the ton matra. That is the essence of sound, shabda, from which in turn ether, akash, the space element, is derived. Therefore, the space element contains the quality of sound, which is perceived by the ear. The air element is the derivation of the essence of touch, sparsha tanmatra, which combines with that of sound. Therefore, the air element contains the attributes of sound and touch, right? Because when you touch things, you get a sound also. Mm-hmm. Right? Although touch is the special quality of air, it is sensed by the skin. The fire element is derived from the sense of color, rupa tanmatra. It combines the qualities of sound, touch, and color, and its special property is sight, which is sensed by the eyes. The water element is derived from the essence of taste, rasa tanmatra. All three preceding qualities, sound, touch, color, are found in it, as well as the special quality taste, which is sensed by the tongue. The essence of smell, Gandha Tanmatra, produces the earth element, whose special property is odor, which is sensed by the nostrils. This grossest element contains all of the four previous qualities. Right, so each one, as it manifests, it contains what's before it. Mm-hmm. Right, so this way you get 20, then there's the mind. Thus the course of evolution takes place in 24 stages. It starts from the root, called Prakriti, and it ends with the earth element, the grossest manifestation. This process is broken down into two major categories: the development of Prakriti as buddhi, ahankar, and the 11 senses, and the evolution of the five subtle elements and the five gross elements. Right. So in other words, they'll take the subtle body and then what we would count as the gross body. So that's the two processes.
Goes on simultaneously.
Means it's running and it goes on simultaneously, but its manifestation, one comes after the other. Because what you're doing is, what's not mentioned here is that each time you're adding more false ego. Right? So that's why it becomes grosser. So you add false ego and then you get the ether and sound, right? And then the ear. And the sense of hearing, right? You know, so all that'll come out. Then you add false ego again. Then you'll get the air, touch, and the skin. That'll come. Then you add again, and you'll get the next one. And this. So what you're doing is adding false ego each time. So that makes it come down. So having come all the way to there, so we can see is that the creation is happening because of false ego. So if you want to get rid of creation, means they go through this whole thing, so all you have to do is get rid of false ego. Right? But if you get rid of false ego and don't replace it with anything, then it just results in liberation. But you get rid of false ego by transferring it back to its original state of, I'm servant of Krishna, then you situate, the material creation's gone, and then you're situated in the spiritual.
But they also to get rid of false ego?
I mean, that will be there because it'll come up, but they won't get rid of the original one. It means they'll think they'll be getting rid of it, but they won't be. Because until you accept I'm servant of Krishna, you haven't gotten rid of it. So even you're liberated, you still have it. So that's why they come back. Because they haven't gotten rid of that false ego. The first category is divided again into two parts. The internal senses, atakarana, and the external senses, bahyakarana, which are the five cognitive and five active senses, respectively. The second category is also divided into two main parts, non-specific qualities, avisesha, and specific qualities, visesha. The five tanmatras, or subtle elements, are said to be non-specific because they cannot be perceived and enjoyed by ordinary beings. But the five gross elements are said to be specific because they possess specific characteristics of being pleasurable, painful, or stupefying. These specific manifestations can be categorized into two major parts, the external gross elements and the three bodies, physical, subtle, and causal. Causal would be, you know, that would be probably that original ego.
Yeah.
That original I-ness. That'll be what causes. That's different from the false ego of the specific body, you know,
yeah.
And that.
They're called Sukshma Sharir, Stula Sharir, and Karna Sharir.
Karna Sharir.
Yeah.
Okay. So Stula means gross.
Yeah.
Sukshma means subtle, and yeah. Karma would be the causal.
But for us, Karma Sharira would be the soul.
No, Karma Sharira is still the same thing. Yeah, see, the difference is they think they get rid of it because they get rid of the material identity. But what it means, in other words, there's specific material identity, and then they're taking generic material identity. But they don't understand material identity is actually I'm the controller and enjoyer. So they've only gotten rid of I'm the controller and enjoyer in relationship to the material energy. But it haven't gotten rid of it in the concept that I am not the controller and enjoyer. Right? So it is all these is they can enjoy the material, but they don't distinguish spiritual. So then that's what got us into the problem in the first place. So we don't distinguish this is spiritual energy, it's not for me to enjoy. So trying to enjoy that, then you're put under the control of the external energy. Okay, the concept of the living entity. As was previously stated, Shakya is a dualistic philosophy that acknowledges two aspects of reality, the unconscious principle, Prakriti, and the conscious, Purusha, or the self. Each body contains a self, but the self is different from the body's senses, mind, and intellect. It is a conscious spirit, at once both the subject of knowledge and the object of knowledge. It is not merely a substance with the attribute of consciousness, but it is rather pure consciousness itself. A self-illuminated, unchanging, uncaused, all-pervading, eternal reality. Footnote 6. In the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.25, it is stated. Right? In other words, as we go through, we see as the philosophies develop, we see more and more in connection with what we do, but it's just wrongly applied. You know, they have all the right things and then they come up with something else. You know. Okay, from Bhagavatam purport. Although the soul is in truth both conscious and active, the proponents of Shankya philosophy wrongly separate these two functions of the living force, Atmani, Yechabhidham, ascribing consciousness to the soul, Purusha, and activity to the material nature, Prakriti. According to the Shankarakarika 9:20, 19-20, quote, thus, since the apparent differences between Purushas are only superficial, being due to the various modes of nature that cover them. The Purusha's true status is proven to be that of a witness, characterized by his separateness, his passive indifference, his status of being an observer, and his inactivity. Thus, by contact with the soul, the unconscious subtle body seems to be conscious, while the soul appears to be the doer, although he is aloof from the activity of nature's modes. Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea in the section of the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.3.31-39 that begins, Karta, Shastrarta, Vatvata. The jiva soul must be the performer of actions because the injunctions of scriptures must have some purpose. Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushan, as Govindabhashi explains, the jiva, not the modes of nature, is the doer. Why? Because the injunctions of scripture must have some purpose. Shastrarta Vatvata. For example, such scriptural advunctures as Svarga Kamo Yajeta, one who desires to attain heaven, should perform ritual sacrifice. And Atmanam Eva Loka Upasita, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.15. One should worship with the aim of attaining the spiritual kingdom. Are meaningful only if a conscious doer exists. If the modes of nature were the doer, these statements would serve no purpose. After all, scriptural injunctions engage the living entity in performing prescribed actions by convincing him that he can act to bring about certain enjoyable results. Such a mentality cannot be aroused in the inert modes of nature. Right? It's dead matter, so it wouldn't be able to. So in other words, what's pointing out here in this connection is the living entity is the doer, right? But we also see is that in this, they're trying to say that Prakriti is the doer, Purusha's not doer, is only the observer, right? So then they're mixing up the Purushas. So they're not making a distinction between the super soul and the soul. So it's the super soul who is only the observer, and the living entity is the one who's trying to enjoy the tree, the fruits of the tree, right? It's not material nature. What it's trying to enjoy, the tree, is material nature, right? But does that make sense? So he's the one that's doing it. Otherwise, they put the jiva in this special position in which he's not exactly, right?
They also put Prakriti in a special position.
Well, she is in a special position.
But she's just the field that's everything.
Yes.
For them, if the jiva is observant, then the Prakriti is active.
Yes. Oh, I see. By that, yeah. So it's Prakriti is doing everything. But the problem is Prakriti is unconscious. So how would you invoke that? That you're doing something, why it's not your, how would you invoke to the modes of nature the unconscious? So that's why they're saying is that by that association, then Prakriti has become conscious and, you know, and what was that? They had some nice thing. It's like something that's something, no, but even more than that. It's like something out of a movie, this one. The first evolute of Prakriti is Mahat, or Buddhi of the intellect. This is the great seed of the vast universe, therefore the name Mahat, which means great one. This is the state of union of Purusha and Prakriti. So they're again mixing the Purusha. Because the living entities are injected, but it's also the glance of the Lord. He also enters. Though Prakriti is unconscious material substance, it seems to be conscious and realizes itself as conscious because of the presence of the conscious self. Right? You know, you have the computer there and it's unconscious, but then it realizes itself and then it takes over the universe. But, you know, they use this a lot. It's not an uncommon, you know, at least sci-fis have to use this one. Something has to come alive that shouldn't, you know, otherwise what's the meaning of the whole endeavor, right? You know, if it's supposed to be alive, who wants to pay money? It's not supposed to be alive, then you pay money to watch that, you know. It's just, you know what I'm saying? You go to the circus, you know. You know, the elephant's not supposed to ride a bicycle, but it does. That's why you go and pay. You know? It's like, you know, if you brought a kid, you know, a punk teenager out there and rode a bicycle, who would pay? You know, they're always riding bicycles, you know.
The bear also
you know, a monkey comes out dressed, they don't drive to dress, you know, it's up to them. They go around no clothes, so they dress them up, you know, everything like that. People are flying in the air, they're not supposed to fly in the air, right? You know. Okay.
Soul is the doer only in the sense that it can desire.
Yes, but the point is he's still the doer. But the thing is if you look at it, you know, in his bigger picture, is that he is the doer in that he's assisting. The modes of nature are carrying it out, under higher authority. But we're assisting in that, just like the spiritual nature is carrying things out and we're assisting in there. So the one is that I'm servant of the Lord, right? Then that's the aspect of theirs. I'm not the doer, I'm only the assistant. But it's not that I just sit there and watch and nothing's happening. My sense of doing is I can only assist in what's happening. Right? So you can say the material energy is actually Thimojanacha's doing, but that's under the Lord's direction. Material energy itself is not actually the doer, because it's dead unconscious matter. Right? So the living entity is therefore. So it just depends upon what is your point being made, whether you emphasize the element of being the doer or not. You know, in other words, you're always doing something, but whether you're actually the real doer. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the one is you're looking at it that the living entity is not the doer, so that's why if you just go back to that state, you're trying to be the doer now. It's a modes of nature, so you give that up and then it'll go back to its natural state and Prakriti will go back to its state and everything will be fine. Right? But the point is no, it's you can give that up, but still the soul by nature is active. That's the chit potency. So then when you become active, what are you going to do? So you've already given up the material, but you haven't accepted the spiritual. So the point is I am the servant of the Lord, so I assist. I'm the servant of the servant. Right? So I'm not actually directly the servant. So even the material energy, I'm not actually directly the one that's doing everything. I'm only assisting. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a matter of you bring that out when you want to reduce the false ego or you want to establish the actual ego. Right? But at the same time, see, the idea is that, well, if I'm doing nothing, then what am I doing and this and that? No, you're the one that's making the choices and making the endeavor. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, as you make a choice, things happen. So what does that mean? You're the doer. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. As was previously stated, Shankya is a dualistic philosophy that acknowledges two aspects of reality, the unconscious principle, Prakriti, and the conscious, Purusha, or the self. Each body contains the self, but the self is different from the body, senses, mind, and intellect. It is a conscious spirit. At once, both the subject... we just did that. We just read this purport. Okay. The entire external world and all internal phenomena belong to Prakriti. But pure consciousness, Purusha, is free from the limitations of space, time, and causation. All activity, change, thought, feeling, pain, and pleasure belong to the body-mind organism, not to the self. The self is pure, ever-illuminated consciousness that transcends the entire phenomenal world, including the body-mind complex. Right? So, on one level, it does, but on another level, means, in other words, it transcends the material manifestation of that, but the concept of this, that's inherent in the soul that it's going to do this. So then it's just a matter of doing that in the spiritual world. That's where the impersonalists can't understand, because they'll say is, the senses are carrying this out, it's dead matter. It's the external energy. So both the subtle and the gross body are dead matter. So and the soul is pure. So the soul is not doing the activities. So therefore, you know, how would you have the spiritual, right? Because soul is spiritual and body, gross and subtle, is material. So the idea is that, therefore, how can there be a spiritual world, right? Spiritual means just the soul. Right? But the soul is one aspect of spiritual. Right? There's the soul, there's the internal potency, and there's God. Right? So they're only knowing one aspect, only at best Brahman. Right? So they don't actually know Paramatma, they don't know Bhagavan. So they can't identify that there would be spiritual senses. It means a Brahmavadi, it's all Brahman anyway, so they don't really distinguish. Right, so for them, if you given the experience of it. I mean, in other words, if a Brahmavadi actually takes prashad and comes to a kirtan and sees the deities in the association of devotees, they'll be able to tell the difference because all they're doing is experiencing Brahman. So you can tell that this is superior Brahman. So then they can take up the devotional process, no problem. Right? But your Mayavadis in that, they can't appreciate this because they don't actually understand Brahman. So for them, everything is mundane, right? That's the point. Everything is mundane. So then, so any form, any shape, any action, any results are all mundane because it's all material energy. They don't understand it's the reflection of the original. So for them, therefore, you're getting rid of that, and so then you only have the soul left. Right, so they're only bringing out those aspects of the soul which can just sit there. But the problem is there's more aspects of the soul that they don't appreciate. That's why ultimately the soul can't sit there. The self has a body, but the body is not the self. In the same way, the self has a mind, ego, and intellect, but it is quite distinct from all these. Pleasure and pain, virtue and vice, merit and demerit do not color the pure self. They color the intellect as it becomes involved with its surroundings. Right? Because the intellect was right in the very beginning. Right? It manifests. So then by the interaction of the modes, one identifies with that in the second I-ness. Right? So they're taking the first I-ness is all right. But they don't know that that first I-ness is not the I-ness I'm servant of God, right? Because that's not even a concept. If it's Vaishnav, then that first one you have to switch it from I am the controller and enjoyer into I am the servant of God. So in any case, they leave that first one, right? They get rid of the second three, right? The ego from in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance, right? They get rid of those three. But then they're left with polluted consciousness. They don't know it's polluted consciousness. They think that's the nature of the soul because they don't know the spiritual. So that's why they never actually get out of the material world. You know, temporarily, but you'll be back. Mm-hmm. Like that. Okay. All the experiences of the phenomenal world are received by Purusha because of its false identification with the mind, intellect, and ego. The intellect is responsible for all experiences, but whatever Purusha ignorantly identifies itself with the intellect, but whenever Purusha ignorantly identifies itself with the intellect, it thinks it experiences as the intellect does, even though Purusha is actually always and forever beyond the evolution of Prakriti. Right, so you're identifying with it, therefore you're getting all the problems, or you're getting all the pleasure and pain. So that's true. But the problem is that there is that identification beyond that where those experiences are transcendental. So you understand? So you see that they're just getting up to a point. Does that make sense? So we see here is that's why the acharyas always bring everything back to serving Krishna. Now, it's not enough just to talk philosophy about getting out of the material world. Right? Or just talking about something and being good or bad. Or it's only good because it's connected to Krishna. It's only bad because it's not connected to Krishna. So that aspect always has to be brought out. Like once, I think, one devotee had gone through all the Prabhupada's books, removed all the quotes on Grihastha Ashram. You know, and then compiled it together, probably put it into nice categories, everything like that, brought it night, gave it to Prabhupada, Prabhupada looked at it and Prabhupada said, handed it back and said, useless. Right? And so the body goes, why? It's all his quotes from Prabhupada, from the Bhagavatam and everything like that. You know, why would it be useless? Because most likely in there, they're only talking about what a grihastha does, not his connection of doing that connected to Krishna. You know, because in the purport, probably there'll be a couple of sentences that directly are saying the activity being in point of discussion, then the rest of the purport will be discussing how it's connected to Krishna, and they'll think, well, that's philosophy. You know? But then grihastha is this. No, grihastha is using that with all that philosophy. Does that make sense? So by going through this, you can see is Why is the Shankhya therefore considered in the bogus category? Because it only identifies the material world, winding up the material world without actually attaching yourself to the Lord. Right? You know, just like the others. Being intelligent, being able to discern the material nature and what's there, what's not, and what's real knowledge and not, but not connecting it to the Lord. Right? Otherwise, we do that. We identify. Or understanding that it's all just atoms, everything is just manifesting and dissolving, and it's not actually going to stay in this form. It's all temporary. So by that, it breaks down the attachment to things. We do that, but if you don't take it to the next point of why would you want to break down, why would you want to break the attachment here, is because you're supposed to develop your attachment for Krishna. Right? It's his energy. What you're attached to is actually him, but we think it's the external energy. Right? So then it becomes useful. So when you take all these parts of the Vaishnava Siddhanta, but don't apply it to Krishna, you know, that's where it becomes useful. Like Shankara, then he takes the whole philosophy, but then doesn't connect it to Krishna. Right? So that's where it becomes useless. So the point is it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. It's not connected to Krishna, it's useless. That's basically the bottom line. Okay? Shankhya offers five arguments to prove the existence of Purusha. First, all the objects of the world are meant to be utilized by and for someone other than themselves. All things that exist serve simply as the means to the ends of other beings. A chair is not made for the chair itself, nor is a house made for the house itself. Therefore, there must be something quite different and distinct from such objects. Objects cannot enjoy their own existence, nor can one material object be utilized and enjoyed by another material object. Right? In other words, when they leave the house and all the chairs and everything and pillows start talking and interacting, it's not going to happen. Okay. Okay, therefore there must be something quite different and distinct from such objects. Objects cannot enjoy their own existence, nor can one material object be utilized and enjoyed by another material object. Therefore there must be some other enjoyer of the objects. That enjoyer. I guess an enjoyer in the past, he enjoyed. So that means an old soul like that, kind of, he's old, so he enjoyed. He's not enjoying now. He's too old. Right? That enjoyer who utilizes the objects of the world is conscious, Purusha. Right? Very interesting. In other words, their proofs, many times, are very, very useful. Right? So these ones here, Vaisheshiki has a couple. You know, Nyaya has a few, like Nyaya in establishing God. Here, how to establish the Jiva. Like that, you know, the other, I forget what they had some uniqueness to what they could establish. Very good arguments. Right? Only problem is that they still don't go beyond to the Supreme Lord as Purusha.
Right. It seems like they don't establish a jiva with consciousness, but rather just consciousness. There's no core spiritual identity.
That's there because they don't really understand the principle of that their spiritual life. They understand spiritual, you know, so you can only accept those attributes that would function in spiritual. So if it's something that would be spiritual life, they'll take that and attribute it to the material. You know? So that's why bhakti and activities of bhakti, they would actually take as part of material. Does that make sense? Because otherwise it can't be, you know, like we were saying before, if God can't be changing, so if he changes, and you know, if he's involved in any change, because, in other words, he can't be involved in the material world, right? Because by causation, then whatever is here has to have a subtler form, right? The subtle form has to already include the possibilities of the external. So therefore the material world, with all its variety and activities and that, can't be contained in the supreme if he's unchangeable. Because here everything changes. So that means that he can't be involved. Right? So then that, in other words, they deify. like that. And so, you know, at best they should just leave it at that, but, you know, of course they can't, so you have to harass, so therefore he doesn't exist. But the point is they can't understand that he is having his eternal pastimes. He's stable, but his energy is creating the variety. But he's not different from his energy. So in that way, he's pervading and doing everything with his energy, though he himself is aloof. Right? Because this point that they're non-different, but at the same time different. That's the... Okay, second, it can be said that all objects are meant for Prakriti, because Prakriti is unconscious and is the material cause of all objects. Right? Because you have the material cause, right? So you have the efficient cause, all these things. It is the balance of the gunas, of which all the objects of the world are composed. Prakriti is thus the potential or essence of all pain, pleasure, and neutral states, cannot therefore be the enjoyer of itself, just as even the greatest of men cannot sit on his own shoulders. Right? The proprietor or utilizer of all worldly objects must consequently be a conscious being who does not possess the three gunas, who is completely different from them in both their balanced and heterogeneous states. That transcendent reality is Purusha. Right? Okay. Third, all the objects of the external world, including the mind, senses, and intellect, are in themselves unconscious. They cannot function without guidance from some intelligent principle. They must be controlled and directed by it in order to achieve anything or realize any end. That conscious self who guides the operation of Prakriti and its manifestations is Purusha. Right, so here's where they start, can't distinguish between the Jiva Purusha and the Supreme Lord is Purusha. Right, because it's what the Jiva wants to do is what Prakriti is doing. But why that potency is there? Because the Jiva doesn't have the potency to push this whole material energy, right? Because if I'm going to do something, whatever, according to the law of energy, how much transformation you want, you have to put in that much energy. Right? How much energy you put, you can get that much result. I put less, I'm not going to get more. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So in other words, you're not going to drop an acorn and it's going to, you know, the whole world's going to crack into pieces. Like that, you know, it's funny, but it's not going to happen. You understand? So the point is the energy. So the Jiva doesn't have that potency. So that means it has to be the Supreme Lord, right? And that's where he says to manage it. It's only a fraction of his energy, a very small amount. All it takes is to run the material, like that. But the point is the Jiva, because he desires that it's there, but there's still the higher. So this would establish the two Purushas. You know? That means all of them will establish the two Purushas, but this one especially here. Fourth, non-intelligent Prakriti and all its evolutes, which are by nature pleasurable, painful, or neutral, have no meaning if they're not experienced by some intelligent force. That experience is Purusha. Because otherwise, what does it mean it's pleasurable if no one there is enjoying it? What does it mean if it's pain, if no one's getting the pain? Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, you wouldn't have an aerobics class, right? And feel the burn, right? Fifth, every human being wants to attain liberation and be free from pain and misery. But whatever is derived from Prakriti brings pain and misery. If there is nothing different from Prakriti and its evolutes, then how is liberation attainable? If there were only Prakriti, then the concept of liberation and the will to liberate or be liberated, which is found in all human beings, in the sayings of sages and in the scriptures, would be meaningless. Therefore, there must be some conscious principle that strives for liberation. That principle is the self, Purusha. Because right? Otherwise, why would material energy want to get away from itself? Right? In other words, even if we're saying, oh, I want to get out, you know, on the mundane platform, the point is, you just want to get out of the situation that's causing the problem. You don't want to, yourself, you want to be part of it. It means you want to still be there once it's adjusted. You know what I'm saying? So there's separation. So from the point of that, material energy is there, and the Jiva is trying to liberate itself, because all the pleasure, pain, and everything is coming from the material energy. So the previous one is that experience of it's not by the material energy, it's by the living entity. Therefore, he wants to get liberated. Right? It means the material energy isn't conscious itself, so it can't be experiencing whatever is there. That can only be the living entity. Right? Does that make sense? And the elements of the energy aren't enjoyed by those elements, so there has to be someone else who's enjoying it. Right? The whole thing is who is experiencing. Means, in other words, the material energy is there and it's producing experiences. Who's experiencing it? Because it's not the material energy. Right? Because the point is the elements of the energy aren't there for themselves. It's the living entities who are taking, who are getting, you know, I mean, Grand Canyon's not sitting around thinking, wow, I look great. You know what I'm saying? You know, does that make sense? You know, what was that guy, he finally showed up at Victoria Falls, you know, it says, wow. You know, and then Victoria Falls, finally someone figured it out, right? You know, all the birds and all these other, you know, animals here, they could never figure it out. Right, finally someone showed up, right? No, it's just, it's not appreciated by itself, so therefore it's the jiva that's appreciating all this. Okay. Oh, they put this all at the end. Oh, and they put that all in their process.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Salaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Govinda Prema. Oh.